This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. It is still December 5th. We are still at NDC London, and now we're talking to Paul Betts.
How's it going?
So you've been on a couple of times before. We talked about GitHub for Windows. We talked about Reactive UI. Mm-hmm. And now we are talking about some stuff you've been doing on Xamarin lately.
Yeah. So my dream is to write applications where I can share all my code in C#. It'll be super rad. And have them run on iOS and Android and Windows Phone and WinRT, maybe. But I have it run everywhere and share all the code that I feel like should be shared. So certain code I don't feel like should be shared, like all the views or like, you know, designing how the application feels and stuff like that. But other code I feel like definitely should be shared. Things like loading images or like loading and saving stuff to disk. I don't want to rewrite that on every platform because it seems silly. Unfortunately, if you code like directly using the libraries given to you, you end up doing that, right? You end up having just enough ifdefs that you like can't share a lot of code between platforms.
Even with Xamarin, like Xamarin doesn't abstract that enough?
Well, so Xamarin makes a big deal about like exposing the platform as is, right? They don't try to hide it from you or try to abstract it away from you, which is a good thing, but is also sometimes not what you want.
Okay.
So I've been on a crusade to fix this, and so I've written a number of small libraries that are, despite being small, very handy for making cross-platform applications that are still performant and work great, but you get to share more code.
Okay. Let's start with Splat, if that's okay with you.
Cool. So Splat is a library that lets you share certain things in view models, cross-platform view models, the biggest one being images, right? So it has this abstraction of images that really is, you can just do loading and saving and loading from a resource. Because most of the time, you don't want to like edit an image unless
right,
you're like
right.
writing a certain type of application. You really just want to like load it and display it to the user, right? And so the loading part is really interesting because you usually have to like fetch it from a network and there's caching involved and like all of this stuff isn't very platform specific. But the type of image is always based on the UI toolkit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like it's like NS image in Cocoa or UI image in iOS. Or bitmap image in WPF, and so you can't share that code without like trying to ifdef away the bitmap loader. So
right.
The goal of Splat is that it gives you a type that is an abstract image, and then in every platform version of the DLL, it gives you an extension method called .toNative. And
okay.
So it returns you whatever that platform expects, right? So bitmap image or writable bitmap or whatever. And so that ends up being really useful.
So from whatever kind of platform, then I do .toNative, say in .NET, I just, it returns me a bitmap image.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's typed that way or it's whatever.
Yeah. So the idea is in your view model, you'll load the image and the view model's cross platform.
Mm-hmm.
And in the view, you'll grab that image and say .toNative.
Got it. Okay.
And so it also, Splat also lets you share, colors and geometry primitives like size, rect, and point.
Okay.
And it reuses system.drawing, right? So basically it like gives you system.drawing on platforms that don't have it, like WinRT.
Right.
It's amazing how many UI frameworks decide to redefine how to store the same like red, green, blue, alpha.
Right.
Everyone has a different way. It's like there's only four numbers. we can figure out a way to store colors.
It's funny that we all have these like we have these common types for things like, you know, integers, all different kinds of numbers and stuff. But then things like colors that we've been using for decades, you know, and it's like we don't have primitives for
that. And like, I think all of them but Cocoa store them as like a byte, right? So they're all the same. They're all the same type.
Oh, right.
With different names. So this fixes that.
Now,
as well.
Do portable class libraries help with that?
Portable class libraries don't help with that at all because they just won't have the types at all. But those are completely missing.
Right. I mean, with what you're building?
Yeah. So Splat right now has a portable version.
Okay.
And the portable version will using like when you load the platform specific one, it'll like set a pointer in the portable version, so the portable version will know to call out to the real bitmap loader.
Got it.
So it does that kind of like Microsoft always calls it like the platform enlightenment, like light up something, right? Yada, yada, yada. Yeah, so that was the big goal, is that you can load bitmaps in portable code.
Okay, now, a more recent thing that people are doing, especially with mobile and different platforms, is resolution, like supporting multiple, well, Retina basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you load different kinds of images depending on your resolution. Do you have anything for that?
Splat relies on whatever the native loader does. So the iOS loader will automatically take the at 2x version if mm-hmm. it's appropriate. And Android will automatically take the image. So if you load it from a resource, it'll automatically take it based on the Android has a really complicated version of like XXHDPI or like LDPI. Okay. And so it doesn't try to do it itself, because to do that, you'd have to detect the display DPI yourself.
Right.
And okay. kind of like, and I don't think that maybe Windows 8.1 has something related to high DPI explicitly around images. But as far as I know, I don't think they're on that level yet.
Okay. So is that it for Splat?
Yeah, so
lightweight, tight.
Yeah, yeah. And so another library that's really interesting is called Modern HTTP Client.
I've seen this one. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And so HTTP Client, the .NET, mm-hmm. super awesome, portable HTTP getter and poster and patcher.
What about footer?
And it also footers. On all the Xamarin platforms, it's implemented using, as far as I know, HTTP web request, which especially on iOS is kind of problematic because it doesn't call this method to activate PG service.
Okay.
And it also doesn't, it's blocking. So it'll create threads in the background and then park them. And so if you issue a bunch of requests, like, at the same time, you'll end up with like 8 threads just sitting there waiting. And on your phone, I mean, the newest phones are a lot faster. I always test on, like, the crappiest phone I can find. So, like, I had an iPhone 4, like, the lowest spec one I could use.
Right.
And it would just, like, my app would be super slow and, like, janky because it has all these threads that it's just waiting on, right? So the Core Foundation has its own networking library, or, like, the Cocoa UI, and it is completely asynchronous in the sense that you issue a request and you don't create another thread, and it just posts the result back to your thread.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's cool because that means there's no extra threads.
Right.
So basically I took the two most popular networking libraries for Cocoa or Android. The Android one is called OKHTTP. It's written by the Square guys.
Okay.
And made them HTTP client compatible. Right.
Okay.
So usually this is kind of like this little known feature of HTTP client. So HTTP client is kind of this interface. It's an interface that isn't an interface. Because in the middle there's this type called HTTP message handler.
Yeah.
And it's basically the guts of HTTP client, right? So it's like it does all the actually interesting work, right? Whereas HTTP client, the outer class really just does like kind of like building a form correctly, like taking form parameters and building them into an HTTP request and stuff like that.
Okay.
Like the things that don't involve transport at all, right? It's just like following the protocol. And so it means that in your portable library, you'll do everything with HTTP client, right? And maybe in your test runner, you don't care, so you'll just run it using the standard HTTP client.
Mm-hmm.
But in your app, you create like a method that, like a factory method that like creates an HTTP client for you. And so in your app that's not portable, right,
mm-hmm.
you'll create one that has this okay network handler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the advantage is now that you get your network requests go away faster, you don't have all these threads backed up, and you get it for free. Like, you don't have to, like, learn anything new, which is really cool.
Okay.
So if you wrote it with HTTP client, then you just get this perf benefit for free.
So you just drop in, basically.
Yep. And in the latest version, I made a big deal around being able to cancel requests. So being able to, based on the headers, so there's a setting in HTTP client that lets you return this result as soon as the headers come back, but not mm-hmm. necessarily the result, right?
Right, right.
So you can say, like, based on the headers, you can say, like, oh, I don't want this, and cancel
right.
it.
If it's 400, 500, or whatever.
Yeah, and
it's
so.
It's not gonna have a body you care about, right?
Yep.
Or whatever.
Yeah, or like you decide based on the e-tags that, like, I already have this cached. Uh-huh. So that's a big deal, so you can say, like, I don't want this. Like, don't bother. Cause that's, like, on mobile, you're really bandwidth limited. Like, you can get really huge performance benefit out of doing stuff like that. And so I made a big deal to, like, cancellation goes all the way down as fast as possible to the underlying network transport. So,
oh, wow.
So you'll actually drop out. Like, you'll cut the connection really quickly.
So you talked about the different transport layer or whatever underlying libraries for iOS and Android.
Mm-hmm.
Do you basically call back to the native Windows one, or have you kind of re-implemented on Windows?
On Windows, I don't think. So WinRT does this already. Mm-hmm. So they just handle it for you. And on Windows Phone, I don't think there's any, like, anything better than HTTP web requests.
Okay.
Like, you just, that's the best you can do.
Okay.
As far as I know, I could be wrong. And I think, but on WinRT, they'll just implement it for you, and it's already is
cool.
Pretty fast. So.
Okay. So I'm not, one thing I'm not following is, let's say I've written my code. I drop in your assembly.
Mm-hmm.
I change a using statement or a change, I bring in, like I add in a using statement and I change, is the name of the class the same or is it a different?
So HTTP client has one of the constructors is a one that takes a parameter.
And that parameter you're talking about.
is the real guts of it,
okay.
Right, that actually does something. And so the reason you use a factory like to create HTTP client
mm-hmm.
is if you want to use this library in a portable library, right? Because like it can't use okay HTTP network thing in a portable library because then it doesn't work on iOS and like
right.
So it's the same kind of like enlightenment strategy style thing where you're like you inject a factory
okay.
and the default factory just creates a dummy one or like creates the default HTTP mm-hmm. client. But then in your app, you replace the factory with one that returns the good one.
Right? Got it. So your native or whatever local code will say, well, I know I'm running on Android, so you say, okay.
Yep. Yeah,
got
exactly.
It. Okay. There was one more library?
Yeah. So the other library that I've written that is around useful around mobile, it's not really like around cross-platform things, although it runs on, it's a portable library, so it runs everywhere, is a library called Punch Clock.
Okay.
And so what it does is it lets you... So once, now that you've got this awesome network library, you're like, I can make as many network requests as I want.
Mm-hmm.
This will be great. You make like 30 in a row because you're like really all about async await.
Right.
And then you find out that you're still going to grind your app to a halt because you can't make 30 web requests right. in a row. It doesn't matter how good your stack is. Like some bad things are going to happen. But you really need all 30 of those web requests. So what Punch Clock does is it lets you, it's a little bit of like a really tiny wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets you just pretend that you can schedule, like make as many web requests as you want. Right. And it'll dispatch them four at a time.
So it just queues them up. Right?
Yeah. And so that number four is based on a library, an Android library called Volley. And
okay.
so Volley does similar things, only it's way more complicated and way more, does way more stuff. Does like all kinds of caching and like, you know, crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. If you're doing Android, like for Java, you should definitely check it out because it's awesome.
Cool.
But they figured out that like four web requests concurrently is a good number on just regardless of connection. It like ends up working out pretty well. So the default is four.
Okay.
And so the cool thing about Punch Clock is that it is a priority based,
mm-hmm.
scheduler.
Mm-hmm.
So if you queue up like 10 requests that are like background requests, like say you're doing like app analytics,
right?
Like where you're like sending off like, oh, you know, the user did this and you blah, blah, blah. They clicked on this ad, whatever. You put that at the lowest priority. And then you always want a request that is initiated by the user to like take priority,
right?
Because you want that to come back fast. And so you put that in the higher in a priority, and the priority is just an integer. Like you can decide whatever hierarchy you want,
okay.
And then it jumps to the front of the line. Right?
Okay, wow.
So it's pretty handy, and it's really like really simple to use. There's really just one API or like one method called enqueue, and that's all there is to it. And so since it's async await, you don't know any difference in the return thing. It just says like you await that, you await the enqueue instead of await the actual thing, and
right.
you get the same result.
And so this is specific to network requests, right?
You can do it with anything.
So I enqueue a task?
Yeah, anything that returns, anything that's awaitable.
Okay.
Nice.
So you can decide to enqueue anything. So
wow. Okay, yeah, that definitely makes it. So I'm trying to think through. I mean, you could enqueue all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
That's great.
Yep. Oh. Yeah.
So the natural question here, you're talking about all these libraries for Xamarin with mobile and network requests. Are you building something that uses all this stuff? I mean, or is this just stuff you've been playing with? Or?
Yeah, for the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, 6 months a year, I've been working on an internal application inside GitHub that it's a single project, CS project, it's both iOS and Android, but it's like a production application. And so it's for our support team at GitHub. So
okay.
support, we make a big deal about support being really good at GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do that, we built a lot of like special tools. Like we have our own support system called Help. And so, yeah, so if you're ever having trouble with Git or GitHub or anything related to getting your work done with GitHub, the website, or
mm-hmm.
Git, the product, email support@github.com, and they'll do a great job at getting back to you and like solving your problems. Even if it's like, oh, I deleted a branch by mistake. Like we can probably bring it back.
Wow.
Like all kinds of like really handy stuff. And so, as part of that, we make a big deal that you can, like, support people will often need some help, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
to solve something really complicated.
Right.
And
then
so,
you can go back to engineering.
So just like on GitHub, when you @mention somebody, you can @mention somebody in help, right?
Oh. Hmm.
And so the mobile app lets you read your app mentions, right? So if, so it's really for people who aren't in support, but like developers and stuff, so that support people can get an answer quickly. And so you can type up a reply and it can be really terse, and then the support person reads it and they can type like a really nice formatted one to send to somebody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like, any other questions?
No, I've been enjoying listening.
Fair enough.
What else have you been up to when you're not writing cool code?
When I'm not writing cool code, the biggest thing I'm working on right now, which isn't cool code, but it's still important, is reactive UI has been for years undocumented or badly documented. The IntelliSense have always been really good, so you can always get information on the method, but like how to design applications or like what's like the right way to do stuff,
right,
has always been something that's like you had to like read via source code or like read samples that like were out of date or whatever.
And I've noticed too, like there have been samples for all the different methods, but picking which one to use or which direction to go down, it's like, I have this problem to solve. Well, here's a list of code. And it's so I had that feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to fix that. And so I'm like I have this giant PR on Reactive UI called like Reactive UI : the book. Right.
Wow.
So it's not really a book, but it'll be like as long as a book effectively.
Yeah.
And so I just like one like big article a day I try to like. And so that's what I've been, it's mostly around documentation.
Cool. All right then. Well, thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Great.